Edge with Chris Graham.
Let's talk some Washington Nationals baseball. Hello, Chris Graham with you here on the podcast. It is Monday morning as I'm recording this. It'll be Monday afternoon by the time you get to hear it. And tonight, Game 3 in D.C. at Nats Park, 7:38 first pitch in Washington with a 2-0 lead on St. Louis in the National League Championship Series, the NLCS. After a pair of weekend wins, well, Friday, I count Friday night as a weekend, certainly. Friday night and Saturday night, Saturday afternoon. 2-0 win in game one as Anibal Sanchez goes no-no for 7 2/3 innings. Sean Doolittle gets the last four outs. And then game two, Max Scherzer goes six innings. I think it was six plus, if you want to say. Leadoff hitter in the seventh got a base hit, but just gives up the one base hit. Nats eventually win that one 3-1. Getting some help from the bullpen, and so now after two no-hitters carried into the seventh inning or beyond by Nats pitchers, it's now up to Jack Flaherty to keep St. Louis in this series. The Cardinals losing the first two at home in Busch Stadium, and if you have to put your season on the line with anybody, if you're St. Louis, you certainly don't mind it being Jack Flaherty. You look at his season numbers and you say, good numbers, 11-8 record, 2.75 ERA, walks and hits to innings pitched of 0.97, 10.6 strikeouts per nine. Those are good numbers, but you look at his numbers in the second half since the All-Star break. All-Star game was July 9th. Second half plus the playoffs. Well, the second half numbers first. 7-2 record in the regular season second half, 0.91 ERA, 0.71 whip, 11.2 strikeouts per nine. And a slash line, that's batting average, on base percentage, slugging percentage, slash line of 142, 208, 217. Those are like left-handed pitcher one-out guy numbers, what do they call them, loogies. Lefty one-out guy, those are absurd numbers for a starting pitcher who pitches six, seven innings a game. In 17 starts, including two in the NLDS, he didn't give up more than three runs in any of his starts. Gave up three runs in just three games. And in one of those games, actually, just two earned runs. So, and then he also didn't give up a run in eight of his 17 starts, dating back again to the All-Star game this year, back July 9th. That's a long time ago. It was a lot warmer than it is today, among other things. He did take the loss in game one of the NLDS to Atlanta, but he gave up three runs in seven innings there. Gave up a two-run homer in the seventh inning, went 117 pitches in that 3-0 loss. Certainly, if you get some help there from his offense, it's a different situation. He did rebound to win game five. Hard to say that he was the key in that one. That's the game that the Cardinals had the 10-0 start in the top of the first, all the way on the way to a 13-1 win. So, but those are the numbers for Flaherty. He's the guy going tonight for the Cardinals. We'll talk about Steven Strasburg, who's going for the Nats in a second. Just wanted to look at Nats hitters versus Flaherty. I like to break this down when I talk about a game going in. It's usually have a lot more to talk about, and we will with Strasburg against Cardinals hitters coming up later. But not a lot here because Flaherty's only in his second full season as a starter. He had a couple starts back in 2017. I say a couple. Maybe it was five or six. Last year's first full season as a starter. This year's second full season as a starter. And he has just one career start against the Nats, and it was way back in September of 2018. And he had he gave up one run on three hits and five innings in that start. So it's hard to extrapolate anything really from a start over a year ago for a young pitcher who's really come into his own. In the second half of this season, the Nats hitters are just 5-for-21. I say just. It's not a bad average, but just 21 at-bats collectively by Nats hitters. Trey Turner hit a home run in that 2018 game. Anthony Rendon doubled, and that's the extent of what we know. That's not a lot there. I'd say, generally speaking, a starting pitcher who's never really faced a team, and I would almost count this as never really having faced Flaherty. Starting pitcher, certainly the first time through the lineup, should have the advantage. If not, you know, even the second time through, because you're still figuring this guy out. Cardinals hitters have a history against Strasburg, just because Strasburg's been around for a while, and the Cardinals have obviously been around for a while, right? Strasburg pitched twice against St. Louis this year. He got the win back in May, May 2nd start. He gave up a run on six hits in 6 2/3, struck out nine, walked two. And he pitched most recently in September 16th. You know, the Nats played a three-game series in St. Louis back in the middle of September. Lost two of the three. They actually lost this game. Strasburg got a no decision. Didn't go very far. 99 pitches in five innings. He walked four. Gave up two runs on three hits. I remember that game pretty well. Watched that game pitch for pitch. And Strasburg struggled not as much with the strikes, and he did walk the four, which is, you know, obviously an indication of something. But also Cardinals hitters just really doing a good job of working at bats, working counts, and kind of a little bit of what they did better in game two against Steven Strasburg, against Max Scherzer. Game one against Sanchez. Sanchez was at around 11, 10 or 11 pitches per inning all the way through. He got taken out. I think it was the 100th pitch or so, maybe 100, 101 pitches. With two outs in the eighth when he gave up that hit. Finally, the first hit of the game, I believe that was Jose Martinez who had that hit, the pinch hitter. He was very efficient, Sanchez was. Scherzer was a little further along. I want to say the first inning he was around 18, 19 pitches, and he kind of stayed hovered in the 15 pitch per inning range. He was around 100 pitches as well, but only went to seven. I say only seven. Seven. If you get seven out of Strasburg tonight, I think you'll be very happy if you're Davey Martinez. But Strasburg struggled in that start back in September, about a month ago, and only was able to go the five innings with 99 pitches. Cardinals hitters put up good numbers collectively, and I'll tell you in a second, it's a little deceptive, but collectively, a 279, 336, 419 slash line. And 36 hits and 129 at-bats. But then you look at it, and a lot of those hits and a lot of those at-bats, actually, too. Marcell Ozuna, former Marlin, so he's, you know, got a former long-time Marlin, so a lot of at-bats for Ozuna. 14 for 44, pretty good slash line. 318, 348, 591, that's an OPB, OPS of, what would that be, 909. So that's pretty good OPS. Three homers. A triple, a double, nine RBI for Ozuna against Strasburg in those 44 bets. But you take those numbers out, and you know, you can do the quick math on that. That'd be 22 for 75, much more manageable if you're Strasburg. And the success for other guys in the lineup, modest. Only four guys I could count with that I saw in the matchup who have career 10 at bats or more. Against Strasburg, and none of them are really outstanding, if you want to say. Paul Goldschmidt, maybe the most so, 6 of 23, a 261 batting average, 261, 370, 341 slash, two doubles, three RBI, five strikeouts as well. Dexter Fowler and Yadier Molina, both 3 of 11 against Strasburg. Matt Carpenter, 4 of 18. And so, in fact, this lineup has three home runs against Strasburg, and they're all three by Ozuna. So one guy to worry about if you're a Nats fan in the lineup, really, and that would be Ozuna. You get through Ozuna, and you feel good. I mean, not to say anything else. Strategy going in, I mean, I like to go over this from the Nats perspective on a regular basis. Strategy going in is probably not a lot different. You know, we all know the Nats have the league's worst bullpen. That's not going to change in the playoffs. Your roster is what your roster is. The Nats with the worst bullpen ERA in Major League Baseball this year, worst bullpen opponent's batting average in Major League Baseball this year. I haven't seen a bullpen slash, but I imagine it's even worse. If it could be worse than the worst, it would be worse. But you know, you don't worry about that because you don't need to use your whole bullpen. Theoretically, you don't. If you get into your B bullpen, that's a sign of something else. You focus on the two guys really that you really want to see if you're Nats fans. Obviously, Doolittle, Sean Doolittle, and Daniel Hudson. And there was a lot of talk. In fact, I watched the Sports Junkies on the TV simulcast this morning on Masson. It's actually NBC Sports Washington. I watched it on the Sports Junkies, the 106.7 guys up in DC. And it seems like from the guys they were talking to, the analysts they were talking to, Tanner Rainey is interesting. It seems like he's kind of pitched his way a little higher up the chain. He might be the first guy out of the bullpen if you have to use somebody before Doolittle or Hudson. I think we saw that back in Game 5 of the NLDS. Got a couple of important outs. You can't use tonight. You can't use Patrick Corbin like you've had the ability to use Corbin in a couple of recent outings. In fact, Corbin's only started one game so far in these playoffs. The Nats are now in what game? This will be game 9 of the playoffs. Just the way things worked out because of the way the regular season ended, and then needing to get through the series the way they did. He started game 1 of the NLDS. And then because he was used in relief a couple of times in the NLDS, he's not going here until game 4. He's scheduled to go tomorrow for the Nats. But Corbin has been used – now, he, of course, was used once in game 3 of the NLDS and gave up 6 runs in 2/3. And then he just couldn't get the third out. He had 2 outs, 2 strikes, 1 guy on base, nobody in the 6th inning, I believe, of that game, of game 3, and just couldn't get the outs, couldn't get the last out, couldn't get the last strike, had a couple of 2-strike counts on hitters in that game, and eventually gave up the 6 runs. But Corbin was effective in a couple outings since in relief, including getting a big out in game 3 for the Nats when Scherzer went 7, but he's not going to be available tonight. There was talk in the off day press conference, going to my Nats notebook here, about lefties in the pen and availability. Roannis Elias, remember him? He's on the roster, and he was, Daniel Hudson and Elias were the two. I should say Elias. I'm not talking about the WWE guy. Roannis Elias. They were the two trade deadline guys picked up by Mike Rizzo. Hudson obviously has become the closer for this team. Elias was expected to be a guy that would really add depth at the back end of the bullpen, and just weird situation. His first appearance with the Nats was August 2nd. So the trade deadline was July 31st. His first appearance was August 2nd. And just because of a quirk, he was brought into a game, I think, in the 7th inning, and I can't think who the Nats were even playing then that night. But he was brought in the 7th inning, and then the Nats were short on the bench that night, and it just happened that his spot in the lineup came up. So they weren't – David Martinez not able to double switch, and he sent Elias up to the plate and basically said to him, under orders, don't swing the bat. I believe Elias got a 3-1 count. Maybe even a 3-2 count, and put the ball in play. And as he put the ball in play, it was a sort of a weak ground ball. He tried to beat the throw out, and trying to beat the throw out, he strained his hamstring. As a result, he's only pitched 3 times since August 2nd. So he's pitched 4 times as a Nat. And the last appearance is all the way back on September 5th. But Martinez said yesterday that Elias would be available out of the bullpen, and with Corbin not. The Nats' one weakness has been the lack of lefties in the pen, and that's why you've seen Corbin used 3 times in relief in the playoffs to this stage, because the only other lefty in the pen is Sean Doolittle, and Doolittle has been a closer. He got the save in game 1. He pitched some important outs in game 2, and so he's not a lefty situational guy. And Doolittle, I haven't looked at the numbers to be able to back this up, but just from observation the last couple of years, he seems to be equally effective against lefties and righties. In fact, I might be able to bring those numbers up while we're talking if I filibuster long enough on this. Let's see. So you don't use Doolittle the same way that you use a lefty situational guy, and Elias is probably he is more of a lefty situational guy. So I'm trying to bring this up now, but Elias is, Martinez did talk about Elias being available out of the pen tonight, and that it's the way he talked about him being available was more than just that he's available, but that he's a guy that you'll actually you might see in a key situation tonight, for a one out kind of thing. So I'm trying to get up here now. Let's see if I get this. Oh, yeah, I got a roster here. Boy, just bear with me for a second, because I want to see if I can either prove the point or disprove the point that I was making about Sean Doolittle being equally effective righties and lefties. It just feels to me, his fastball and his slider really work better maybe against righties, in fact. maybe not quite as much as Corbin, but let's see. Let's see, righty lefty. Okay, so yeah, I'm wrong on that. His batting average 279 against righties, 221 against lefties. So yeah, it could be that Doolittle is more effective there. But let's see, even improving anything right here? I don't know if I'm improving anything right here. 43 strikeouts, 165 at bats, 23 strikeouts, 77 at bats. Yeah. So actually, yeah, Doolittle is a little more effective this year, at least against lefties. So, Elias, I'll get that right eventually. Ronis would be the harder name to pronounce, you would think. Elias might give you a second lefty out there. But again, the game plan, if you're the Nats, the best game plan, if you're the Nats, I guess you could say, would be Strasburg gives you seven innings. And if he gives you seven, you know, Doolittle can work the eighth, maybe a combination of Doolittle and Rainey. And then Hudson in the ninth. I mean, actually, I say that depending on the part of the order that comes up for the Cards, and that's the flexibility that Martinez has with. I know that Hudson has become the closer, quote unquote. But when you have a righty and a lefty as sort of co-closers, and the fact that Doolittle does have a save in the last couple of days, you could situationally go if it's the more the righty part of the lineup coming up for the Cards, you go with him in the eighth. And if it was more the top of the order where Colton Wong is part of that mix, you could certainly go Doolittle in the eighth as well. So in any case, if Strasburg is able to give you seven, that's the best case scenario if you're Dave Martinez. If you go six, you got to examine these possibilities here. I guess if you go six, you're definitely going to need to have Rainey. You definitely probably need to have Elias available. You may need to have Rodney, Fernando Rodney, also available to you out of the pen. A key here then will also be getting, perhaps working Flaherty a little longer than Flaherty wants to go. He did go 117 pitches in his game, one start in the NLDS. Didn't have to work quite as hard in that 13-1 win because he had a 10-0 lead in the first inning. He did go six innings, and I remember watching that game. And yes, I'm that much of a baseball obsessive that I watched that entire 13-1 game. I do remember the talk. I believe Ron Darling was working that game for TBS, and there was a lot of talk during that game about, hey, do you shut him down? I mean, in the fourth inning, as early as the fourth inning, there was talk about, do we shut him down and give him, chance to. He doesn't need to throw these, use these bullets, basically. And he was left back out there for a couple more innings. So, if you can work him a little bit, maybe wear him down. It's going to be a chilly night in D.C., not quite as chilly as it was on Friday night in St. Louis. But, you do have, it will be 65 degrees at game time. It'll be in the mid-50s, as we get into the middle innings of that game. So a colder night, perhaps that has some impact on the game. And the Nats with a chance, if you go up 3-0, you got to feel good about your chances. Only one time in postseason history in MLB has a team blown a 3-0 lead. That was the New York Yankees, obviously, back in the ALCS in 2004. It's a must-win for St. Louis tonight. They do have their best pitcher on the hill. If you're the Nats, you've got all the, you got your best pitcher right now on the hill in Steven Strasburg, career ERA in the 1.4s in the postseason, and a chance to put some pressure on the Cardinals. If you can get a couple runs early, you got Strasburg out there. You definitely put the pressure on the Cardinals. Maybe have to pinch hit for Flaherty in the middle of the game if you get the lead, and he comes up in the fourth or fifth inning with a chance to maybe put some runs on the board. You may see an early hook just for offensive purposes. You, to some degree, if you're the Cardinals, you do have to kind of think about playing this like it's a game seven because of that history, because only one team's ever come back from a 3-0 deficit. If you happen to fall behind a couple runs in the early innings, you do have to think about making more guys available on your staff. Obviously Flaherty still gives you, even if he's down, say, 2-0 in the third or fourth inning, Flaherty on the hill gives you a better chance to win the game down the road. But again, if you have, say, first and second and one out, or something in that nature, where he can't have a productive out with a bunt to get guys in scoring position, and you have to think about do we want to think offense here, or do we want to, you know, perhaps give up a chance at a comeback with a potential, you know, pinch hit base hit or something like that? I mean, there are some situations there that can definitely play tonight in this game. So that is, again, that's game three tonight, 7:38 first pitch, and we will have more today on Augusta Free Press. I'll be monitoring the pregame pressers with both teams, the Nats and the Cardinals, for any updates. One update I did want to give, I talked about the lefties in the bullpen. Victor Robles, he's apparently continuing to be evaluated. That's, you know, whatever word that is the word. Robles, the starting center fielder, hasn't played since game two of the NLDS. Michael A. Taylor's played well in his absence. To a great degree. He's 6-for-20 in the postseason. He had a home run in game two. He did misplay a ball in the eighth inning, but that's just what it was. It was a ball that sort of took off on him right at the end there. It actually led to a run and sort of a knuckly situation there. Doolittle got out on the next pitch, but Taylor has played well in the stead of Robles. Martinez, David Martinez did indicate, though, that if Robles is healthy, he will start. And apparently they're going to put him out today, put him through batting practice, try to have him do some fielding, see what the situation is. Do want to play him at 100%. Martinez did emphasize that you know, you're not going to just put him in the, because Taylor's playing so well, that if Robles is still at 80% or some number below 100%, that you'll probably still see Michael A. Taylor. We've not even seen Robles pinch hit, which is interesting, you know, considering the shortened bench that you have in the postseason. But Robles is maybe closer to playing, but I read into Martinez's comments that probably not. That if you can get through another game with Michael A. Taylor in center field, again, because he's playing well, and you don't have to push a hamstring injury with a guy who is a big part of the effectiveness of Victor Robles is his speed on the base paths, out of the batter's box, out in center field, and you do have, again, a very viable option in Michael A. Taylor, who's playing very well right now, is also generally a elite center fielder defensively, and who right now is hitting well and is contributing offensively. You don't need to rush Robles back. If you can win this series here in D.C., there's, you know, three scheduled games in D.C. Tonight, tomorrow, and Wednesday. If you can win this game, win two of these next three in D.C. and in this series, you don't play again until, I think it's next Tuesday's when the World Series would start. If you get that far, that's another week for Robles to get better, and you would presume that he'd be better in a week if he's 80% now. So no need to rush him back, but that is the latest on Robles. But we'll monitor the pregame presser. That should be sometime middle afternoon. And any updates, we'll post a Nats notebook on AugustaFreePress.com to share the latest. Then, of course, post-game coverage tonight after the game, sometime probably. I mean, these games have been going three and a half hours, so sometime probably before midnight, we'll have a recap of Game 3 and get you ready for Game 4. So thank you for listening to our podcast. Now, we have a couple more coming up today. I'll be talking with Scott German coming up as I'm recording this now. We're getting just to around noon on Monday. At around 2 today, I'll be talking with Scott German. We'll have that podcast up. We'll be talking some UVA football, a lot of UVA basketball. Scott covered the UVA basketball inter-squad scrimmage. Want to get his thoughts on the team. He's seen the new-look defending national champion Wahoos. And with his own two eyes, I want to get his impressions on that. And then at 3 o'clock, talking with Jerry Carter. We'll probably talk some Nats. We'll probably talk some UVA football and basketball, ACC football, and other things in sports too. So a lot more coming up on podcast today, and a lot more coming up just in general on Augusta Free Press. And I want to thank you for listening. And please check us back out as the day goes on. And it's a big day in sports. And I want to thank you for listening. Have a great day, everyone.